But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome to The Wealth Show, where we discuss key topics shaping the UK wealth management industry and investors' portfolios. My name is Jack McRae and I'm joined today by Nicholas Sees, CEO of Sees Bank. Earlier this year, Nicholas stepped into the chief executive seat at the independent Swiss banking group, having previously led the firm's private banking division. As the next-gen leader of the family-owned boutique founded by his father in the 90s, Nicholas offers a personal perspective to the great intergenerational wealth transfer and the evolving demands of a new client base. Welcome, Nicholas.
Thank you, Jack.
You took over as CEO earlier this year. How have those kind of first months been?
Well, amazing. So it's you know, it's a always a role that you take with humility and a lot of respect. And I've got the great privilege of actually fostering continuity of our heritage, our DNA, but as well, you know, pushing through with the new ambitions, the innovation part, and as you say, the next generation kind of vision.
Yeah. What's the first thing you've changed?
It's not always about change, although people like to hear about change and the magic wand effect. But what you want is to actually truly reap the fruits and the benefits of everything you've built. And we've built tremendous success in the last 30 years. This year being our 30th anniversary. And it's about the ability to leverage the platform that we have and the people that we have to truly focus even more on adding value to the client experience, giving access to our experts, you know, through our expertise, investment opportunities. And it's more about, you know, fostering that continuity and continuing to innovate rather than change for the sake of change.
Yeah, you mentioned the DNA. How would you sum up DNA?
So our DNA comes from investments. So the bank, my father founded the bank in 96, and it was to democratize the access to hedge funds and this ability to manage assets in a very performance-oriented fashion. And this DNA continues, and the DNA of actually investing alongside other investors and families, we today as well, you know, invest alongside clients. So in private equity, in co-investments, in hedge funds as well, because we look at the risk and we understand that risk, but we put our money where our mouth is, and we believe in the opportunities that we see. And so this is kind of has been in our DNA. The entrepreneurial spirit has been in the DNA, and that's a lot about responsibility. So you take accountability and ownership of what you do. You have the family values, which are based around trust. We are in a deeply, you know, client-centric business, and it is all about human relationships. And that goes through, you know, time, spending time to understand each other and building that trust. And it also goes then to innovation, you know, and challenging the status quo and looking how you can improve, not staying in the way you've done things in the past, but actually challenging yourself and saying, how can I do better and how can I bring more added value to clients? That's our DNA.
And what is it like working with your father? You mentioned the importance of trust and relationships, and obviously he founded the bank. What is it like, you know, being part of the same group and working alongside someone obviously so close to you?
So it always is a mix, this yin and yang. That's why you have a balance. It's a true privilege to work in a family business, because you never second guess the ambition and the purpose of what you're doing, because there's an alignment of what we want to do and for who we work. We work for our clients. And you know, working with my father, there is no second guessing around those values and the purpose why we're doing it. But as, you know, in family businesses, you have to differentiate the emotional part from the structural governance of taking decisions. And I think this is where you always have animated, you know, conversations around making sure that the vision is heard, the purpose is fully, you know, always where we want to go. But it's great if you have the ability to listen, and we've been interacting, you know, really well in the last 10 years since I joined the bank and the group. So this has been you know, a great journey to leverage on each other and, you know, the experience that he's brought in. So
how do you handle disagreements?
How do we handle disagreements? It's about sharing perspectives and understanding where the other come, where does the other come from, and what is the purpose? Where do I want to bring the company? And then at the end of the day, I need to be, you know, sure about hearing all the opinions of, would it be my father, my executive committee, the board, because those, you know, those are the important things. And then being able to call the shot. And the importance is not just the decision, is why you made it, where it's leading to, in order to understand that if it doesn't go as planned, you exactly know why you made that decision and how you can potentially adjust it. And, you know, if you talk to entrepreneurs, and we have many entrepreneurs in our client base, you always fail. And it's not the failure that matters, is what you've learned from it, how you get back up, and what you correct to it. So I think that's, you know, that's the important part of how we make decisions. It's about the ability to decide and knowing why you've decided.
And is there added pressure given you've got your name on the door?
That's a very good question. And I have to say the pressure was a lot bigger at the beginning when I joined the group and the bank in 2017. And it's pressure which you put on yourself. People put on you because of expectations. And I've been able to find my own ground by knowing why I'm doing this, and the ability of added value that I can bring to the teams, to the clients, with that focus. And I'm not making any kind of decision for someone else. This can bring, you know, a lot more pressure than what you want, and can influence you in a negative way to make decisions. And today I just have the pressure of actually working for clients and making the right choice to add more value to clients, and making sure that I can bring the best platform for my employees so that they can perform to the best extent. And that, I think, is a very healthy pressure, rather than the pressure of, you know, being a family member, which is not the right amount of pressure that would influence me positively.
Mm-hmm. So why are you doing this?
Well, exactly, too, because I have the ability to have a family group where, you know, which is family owned. So this gives you immense ability to make decisions and actually, you know, make the right decisions for the clients. And so for me, I'm doing it because I believe we have a unique ability to really become the Swiss private bank of choice by putting clients at the center of everything we do. And by choosing quality over quantity, you know, by really asking ourselves, what does the next generation need in terms of service, in terms of access to people, in terms of transparent conversations? We are living through the biggest wealth transfer, intergenerational transfer. And then it has already started, you know, 10 years ago, but it's going to go on for another 10 to 20 years. So you need to make sure that there is no second guessing from the client around the authenticity of what you're saying and why you're saying it. You're saying it because you're servicing the clients. And that ability for us who have the name on the door and who are family owned is unique, because if that barrier is broken, then clients will open up and share their story. And then you can truly help them. You can truly support the wealth management, the next generational transfer. And that is where you create real added value. And that's the purpose of, you know, what we're trying to create altogether.
Yeah. It's not uncommon for clients to move away from the advisors that their parents went to.
Mm-hmm.
How do you kind of maintain the new client from the new generation?
So the statistics are around 60 to 70%. Huh? So it's huge. That means you're basically, you know, you're losing more clients with the generational transfer. the fact that when I joined, we started having those conversation at systematically talking to all next generations is a first step. The second step is that I lead now as CEO the bank. So there is also an acknowledgement from the next generational that they could actually identify with who we are as an organization because of the leadership. And then the proof is in the pudding. You know, people need to come into our offices and actually, when they sit down, realize, yes, these people are really asking the right questions. They really understand who we are, where we come from, and what we need. They need transparency. They need access to the people. They need a lot of information. They need to see that we are a group and a bank that's willing to evolve and that's willing to adapt. And the fact that, you know, we've launched our digital assets platform and custody platform is a way to identify there is going to be a generation that will have to custody different types of assets down the road. And so you need to cater to that demand. It's not the client who adapts to the organization. It's the other way around. And when the next generation realize this, then they realize it, this is not a fixed model, you know, and it's not an organization that was fit for my father. It's an organization that is fit to service clients. And this makes you a lot more agile, you know, than probably bigger organization that are not as agile as we can be.
Mm. You've touched on it already, but how exactly does this next generation invest differently from their parents?
So there's already, you know, there's a lot of different things, but there's a lot more information. So the access to information and the access to different platforms is immense. So the speed of which you are agile is very different. The trust as well that they potentially have built with organization is also influencing them a lot. But if you can create transparency and this relationship of authentic conversations, then you're adding value to the interactions and to supporting them to, you know, really manage their wealth for the long term with a purpose in mind. Because a lot of the protection of the wealth happens when you actually have that wealth transfer and they can actually plan for it. And if they have the trusted people around them, well, they can, you know, they can organize themselves because there's the whole, you know, location and tax efficiency structures, and all of this comes in your wealth planning. And if you trust the people you're working with, then you're probably going to have, you know, a smoother path than if you're doing it on your own. But if you haven't met the right people, you're probably going to try to do it on your own. So it's just making sure that you can create that trusted relationships with the next generation.
Mm. And would you say that the traditional 60-40 portfolio is dead for this new wave of clients, or is it still kind of the roots of their investment strategy?
I think for headlines, it's always interesting to say, well, the 60-40% portfolio is dead. It has lost a lot of, you know, of its diversification value, because this is why we built 60-40 portfolios. It was for diversification and exposure management and performance. And this has lost a lot of steam because of correlation of assets. Fixed income, equities, and sometimes you even have, you know, commodities which work in a deadlock. And private equity, you know, has provided a huge amount of sort of diversification, as well as hedge funds. And we were able, you know, to position ourselves really well with hedge funds and private equity and co-investments. And so, you know, the portfolios anyways, I think beyond the 60-40 approach, is that client advisors need to spend a lot of time at the beginning to understand the risk profile of a client, to understand their journey, where they want to go and the risk tolerance that they have. Because too often, you know, an institution might come in with a fixed product and tell you exactly why you need it. That's not the way it works. The way it works is that you're curious, you really ask a lot of questions, and then you can guide the clients in terms of what investment profiles suits their needs. And then, yes, you need to have, as an institution, access to the whole breadth of, you know, investment opportunities. And that today goes through, you know, private equity, hedge funds, commodities. And so you can't just go with the 60-40. It's definitely not as adapted as it used to be, and you need to be a lot more tailored in today's world.
And it's not just portfolios that are evolving. Technology is a constant evolution story. How kind of exactly is Cs Bank investing in technology right now to get ahead of, you know, competitors?
So technology, I mean, we're reading it every day in the newspaper. Anthropic, AI is everywhere. And I think the big tech firms are investing hundreds of billions. But you always need to know what you're trying to achieve with that technology and not just run ahead and not even know why you're doing it. We've had a phased approach at, you know, leveraging technology by going into the cloud with our infrastructure and actually, you know, being able to leverage the database and being a lot more efficient. But we are now as well, you know, deploying across the whole group access to Copilot and pilot phases around developing specific agents for specific tasks that really have an added value and bring us a lot more efficiency and a lot more service for clients. But it is to always be taken with, you know, a lot of perspective, because the evolution of AI is huge, and you can as well, you know, get it wrong. You can waste a lot of time just doing everything through AI, and there are still a lot of hallucinations. So that is why, you know, clients come to us. It's for our expertise, and so we leverage it for data analytics but at the end for interpretation, decision. It is that judgment call and that experience that clients value, is that this is the added value that's never going to disappear.
Yeah. Do ultra high net worth clients actually want a digital experience, and this new generation want things online and quick, or do they still want a phone call?
I think it's always a mix, you know. It's a mix of the best of both worlds. You want to have the access. You want to have you know, the things available immediately, but you also want to have the access to people, to the experts, to, you know, either reassure, to share, to discuss. And although, you know, we had this whole phase of everything digital through Zoom calls and digital interactions, but nothing replaces a face-to-face interaction, a discussion to really share what are the real problems in the family, your worries on the wealth side, the family, you know, transition, the kids moving abroad, your personal situation around moving abroad and relocating, and these, you know, these discussions happen face to face. So it is about providing access so that clients don't waste any time. So you need to have digital digital platforms and access, but you definitely need, you know, the human interaction.
Cs Bank has been quite forward thinking around digital assets. Why did you embrace it so wholeheartedly?
So, as you know, we talked about it, but it started with understanding what are, you know, the services and needs of the next gen, and how is the world going to potentially evolve. And so digital assets in general and tokenized assets are gaining momentum and are going to represent a percentage, non-significant, you know, of 2 to 5% potentially down the road of assets held by investors. And so my role is to be able to provide a trusted custodian platform that can cater to these assets for those clients so that you have a holistic view as an investor of where your assets are, how they're doing, and the discussions you can have with your clients. If they can't talk about, you know, digital assets with me about the wealth, then you're missing a whole part of the spectrum because they're potentially having that somewhere else and they need advice on it. They need potentially diversification advice or custody advice. And we said we don't want to miss that, and we want to play a role in that. And so we embarked and did a partnership and have developed the custodian platform with the bank. And since now, 5 years. Mm. So that was the underlying reason of why we did it.
So do you see crypto becoming a core portfolio holding, or is it more kind of just a bet?
It's not a core, definitely not a core holding of the portfolio. Mm-hmm. Yes, some investors have, you know, done a huge success, but this is a very, very small minority. Mm-hmm. And some do invest small parts of their portfolio, 1-2%, to diversify and to experience. But there's a whole pendant as well of, you know, when you tokenize assets, that you can store them digitally in your portfolio. Would it be, you know, a painting? Would it be a building or a car? You can tokenize assets and divide them through family members, and then you can store them in your bank. So it's also a security around that. But for us, it's the ability to, you know, provide that platform and that safe custodian. For the time being, it's definitely, you know, not a core holding.
Mm. And are these new innovations from the bank, you know, product of you being a boutique and being able to kind of make these, kind of take these modern approaches to kind of wealth management?
The advantage of being a boutique is that you can harness what we call the best of both worlds around being very process driven. You know, around the fundamentals and the solidity of how we invest, but that then at the same time, you know, the agility of making decisions fast, giving access to the experts, to the clients in a very fast and efficient way. And this is also gives us the ability to look at and understand the needs of the clients and to say, should we innovate? Should we add something to the service platform? Because at the end, the focus has always to be not innovation for the sake of innovating, innovation for the sake of adding more value to the client relationship in the efficient way, because we know this is the core capabilities and the requirements that the clients expect from us. If it's not that, we're not going to innovate. And we might innovate into something where we say, well, you know, we were wrong. And then we need to say, well, we're not going to continue to develop that. That's the, you know, that's the huge advantage of being a boutique. We commit to a decision, but we also understand that we might need to change or adapt that innovation that we did. And that's what clients expect from us as well.
Everyone seems to talk about assets under management, but would you say scale is overrated?
I'm not going to comment for others, but for us, it's not just about scale. Yes, scale is an indicator, but quality and the profitability of with who you grow and where and at what risk is a lot more important. And I think this quality of how you grow is long term going to be a lot more important for us. And this is why, you know, as a family business, you have a long-term approach. We don't have any quarterly reportings. And focusing on quality before quantity is, I think, something that has proven for the long term.
Yeah. And how do you compete with traditional UK wealth managers on their own kind of home soil?
So, you know, the competitiveness is in private banking is huge. I mean, just looking at Switzerland in a whole, you know, there's hundreds of private banks. So we don't look at it just, you know, us competing in the UK with the clients that we have. The advantage that Switzerland offers as an offshore market is, you know, geopolitical stability, the strengths of the Swiss franc, the potential, you know, location advantages that families see for retirement or for relocating, and the whole wealth management, private banking expertise background, multi-currency ability to manage assets is an advantage in itself. So this is how, you know, we can position ourselves as being competitive, and the approach of being family owned and family led, with the background of hedge funds and investment opportunities, is something that definitely, you know, sort of puts us out there in a forward looking spot.
Mm. And how do you view the UK wealth management sector today?
The UK wealth management sector, I mean, it's the independence has been, I think, quite strong since the last 10 years, or Brexit was, I don't remember how many years ago, but
decade.
How many?
A decade.
Exactly. So the wealth management system has held very strong. The environment affecting it all over, I think, is always, you know, you can't predict it, and it's not easy. But definitely the UK has, I think, a lot to offer in terms of wealth management and private banking. And we're seeing as well I think they're going to do an agreement as well with Switzerland, you know, to sort of work together in terms of wealth management and how these countries can do more together on the wealth management and private banking sector.
Mm. And where do you see the most growth potential for CS Group in the UK over the next, say, 5 years?
Most potential is going to come for us at, you know, continuing to do what we do. Nothing completely new, but, you know, the quality of the people that we have on the team, the quality of the investment platforms, the quality of the opportunities of serving entrepreneurs, external asset managers, and wealthy families is something that, you know, time helps organization like ours because of reputation and because of word to mouth. And this is why, you know, the service quality and why families then come to us.
Well, that seems like a good point to end on. Thank you so much for joining us, Nicholas, and we will see you next time on The Wealth Show.
Today is VE Day. The boys
are the crowd queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing
landed.
Down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth: cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.